Well, this week on Branded, me and Brian Shumway are going to discuss Facebook and some of its recent forays into advertising. But first, we're going to start with some follow-up. This week is our second episode, and last week we talked about what good brands are and what they do. Did you get a chance to look at the video I sent you about Burberry's brand?
I did, yeah. I really liked it, actually. Yeah, it was a cool video. I think that a lot of her thoughts are... I mean, they're ideas and thoughts that I think all advertisers, marketers need to understand. I liked it because she went beyond just, well, I don't know how much we're going to talk about this, but she went beyond just saying, create something that's funny or that's memorable, but something that really tells the story of your brand. I feel like a lot of brands these days are only focused on memorability and just, can I create a quick spot or, you know, an image or something that will stick with people? You know, a la Geico ads or something like that. Hey, let's riff on these funny little idioms and maybe they'll be memorable. But I really like what she said about making sure that everything that you do tells the story of your brand, no matter what medium you're trying to communicate it through. You know, the video specifically talked about changing and going after a different target market for Burberry and saying, well, now we're going to do a lot more digital, we're going to do a lot more social, but just because the method changes, that doesn't mean that our story needs to change. And I really liked that.
I thought she did a good job of addressing something that we were talking about last week, which was how a brand can be both authentic and smart, meaning it needs to stay true to who it is while also making good decisions in the marketplace. So, and how, you know, change can happen as long as it doesn't alter what you are as a company. I think this video did a really good job explaining how you can do new things but stay true to the brand's roots. And the Burberry examples were specifically interesting to me because as they try to figure out, you know, we have this well-known, beloved brand, how are we going to take something that people already understand and know and love and take it to a new generation, take it into a new opportunities of advertising? Internet is an obvious example of something that wasn't around before, and now they have to figure out how a Burberry, a, you know, classic British brand, is going to come into this new section of advertising. I thought they did a really cool job showing how you know, they took their stores, their retail stores, and decided that they wanted the stores to look like their website. That's crazy. That you know, that's an awesome idea because people love their website. Well, let's make the store look that like that. Where you run into some scary things about changing the way your retail stores operate is that's where many of your consumers who love the brand are coming anyway. So the people who used to like old Burberry, you know the brand that they think it represents, they might not like what this new movement is. But if you stay true to the brand, then what the new thing is actually just a remix of the things that they've had before, that British sense of style.
Well, and it has to be all part of the same whole, and it has to... I mean, you always say in advertising, right, that a campaign needs to have legs. You know, the campaign can't look entirely different in digital as it does on print or as it does on a bus wrap or, you know, some sort of outdoor advertising. It has to be all part of the same campaign and communicate the same message. And I totally agree with what you're saying there. What happens a lot of times, in especially in bigger companies, in these corporate environments, you have one team that may be working on a certain project or certain product, and another team may be working on a different product or project, and they're all trying to message them in different ways because, you know, and justifiably, they're different products. But just because they're different products doesn't mean that they're not all part of the same brand and that they shouldn't all communicate the same brand story. And I think last week we talked a little bit about some digital companies. We mentioned Google a little bit. And I think that Google would be a company that I could actually point to as failing in some aspects of this, in the fact that different products may be pitched different ways from Google. You may see the way that Google pitches, you know, their Nexus devices versus how Google talks about Maps versus how Google talks about, you know, a different product. But what we talked about last week and the example that we shared, kind of the Google Zeitgeist and those sort of ads, were really tying in the brand as a whole. And hopefully that's what you see in from bigger companies, from these large corporate entities, that you see that even though the product is different, and even though the team working on it may be different, or even the ad agency, right? You may say that this one company uses two different ad agencies, for two different products, but hopefully they're all telling the same brand story. And I think that was kind of the point of the Burberry video.
And what you really want to avoid is letting a consumer see these different executions of the same idea in different places and know, I know which, team inside of this company is more powerful or has the ear of the CEO. Because if their print is incredible and their digital is not, then you kind of can assume that, oh, they didn't think that digital was as important as print. And when you can see those holes, that's bad. And a lot of times, brands who are having a hard time adapting in the digital age know that they're weak there, and so they don't put as much effort into the digital side. But every part of the campaign, from print to radio to digital to billboards, they all have to exude the same message, because if any one of them is off message, it ruins the rest of them. And this is something that I don't know that a lot of brands understand, that if you're weak in one spot, even your best spots look bad now because that spot was weak. And that's why a lot of times people need to consider the fact that they don't need every medium of advertising. They need the ones that will best suit their message and best reach the customer wherever the customer's at. And this Burberry ad does a or video does a very good job showing how those kinds of things can synergize, to use a business phrase.
Sure, and I think it goes back to what we were talking about last week with authenticity. As a person, we don't, I guess I can speak in my own experience. I don't ever want to be the type of person that, if I'm in, an academic environment, I act one way. If I'm in an athletic environment, I act another way. Not that those two situations don't require different actions, but I mean, my personality, who I am at my core, hopefully I'm authentic. My morals, my standards, my beliefs, my ethics, all of those things are the same. I'm not trying to fit where I need to fit if it's not me, if it's something that's inauthentic. Maybe that doesn't quite make sense. I
No, I
didn't
think I understand exactly what you're saying. You're saying you can't be a different person every new situation that you're in, that your values need to stay the same no matter what place or situation you're put in. But just keep going on with that personal example. I think that you can stay true to yourself, but know that in an academic environment, you do something different than if you're inside of a religious environment, as if you're inside of a sporting event. I think you can stay true to yourself, but understand that the way that you communicate with others in different settings will change, right? So you don't change everything you believe. All you do is, ask yourself about context. Say, is this appropriate to say at a BYU basketball game or at a, a NBA basketball game? And is this appropriate to say in the middle of a lecture? The answer is probably not, that yeah, say the same thing. But you can still communicate the same idea, just in a more appropriate way. At a game, you might cheer. At the end of a lecture, you might go up and thank the professor for the lecture, as opposed to vice versa. You would probably wouldn't, try to go shake the hands of the players and say, "Oh, good job." Well, you might, but you certainly wouldn't start cheering for the professor in the middle of the lecture, because that would be rude. But in both cases, you are expressing the same message. You're saying, I enjoy this and I want to show my support. But you realize that in different environments, you're going to react different ways. But moving on to our next bit of follow-up, the article I sent you about Disney's marketing campaign, did you read that?
I did, yeah. And I mean, talk about something. We're sitting here, we're talking about authenticity. Yeah, just really disappointing. And I mean, it's interesting. So I read several articles that we linked here. And you say, well, were the choices that the Disney team made in marketing Frozen intelligent? I would say yes, very much so. I think this is a company that learned greatly from releasing The Princess and the Frog, this movie that had a strong female lead, which is what they wanted, but still. But the public still felt like, well, they're marketing this towards princesses and cutesy, and we don't want that. And didn't do as well as it wanted to at the box office. Then you go to a movie like Brave, which we know is a Pixar film, not necessarily Disney, but which is, again, strong female redheaded lead, didn't quite do as well as they wanted. Well, when you look at Frozen's marketing, all of that was hidden. All of the here are the female prominent female leads, here are this is there's going to be a lot of songs in this movie, it's going to be very, play oriented, now that it will be on Broadway. And really just kind of went for here are some funny characters, just go for that lowest, I don't want to say lowest common denominator, but the low hanging fruit perhaps. Go for the children, kids, tell mom and dad you want to go see this movie, and maybe the public will figure out when they see the film what it's all really about. W was that intelligent? I think so. It was it authentic to what Disney really wanted the film to be about? I don't think so, because I think they really did want the film to be this feminine manifesto, this we're getting back to our roots of singing and dancing and this, fun environment, and that wasn't really communicated, which again isn't unintelligent, but it isn't necessarily authentic.
I think there might be two issues here. The first issue is, was the movie made as a calculated marketing decision? Meaning that were the plot, storylines, and the actors hired decided because of their inherent value to the audience that they were going to appeal to, Disney's audience? I think without a doubt, the answer to that question is yes. This was a very calculated movie in how it was going to appeal to, certain segments of the population. But what's odd is that the second issue is that, that might be how the movie was. They decided to market the movie as something else, as something that Frozen wasn't. And you have to ask yourself, why? Why would they do that? Well, I think it's because Disney has no idea what its consumers find, what their consumers want. They think that consumers want maybe an Ice Age type movie of silly characters, when it turns out that Frozen was, the highest ranking, most popular animated movie of all time. And Disney didn't even know how to predict that kind of success. A lot of people would say it's important to be able to predict that something's going to fail, but just as important, if not more important to a company, is knowing when a product is going to be a hit. And they, from this marketing campaign and from all of their actions leading up to the release of the movie, didn't think this movie was going to work. Or I guess you could make an argument that Disney knew that it was going to work, so they didn't have to advertise it, but in the way in an honest way. But really, if you had authentic marketing that actually told the story of what your product is, in this case, the movie Frozen, I don't think Disney would have been hurt at all by that. In fact, I think you would have seen even more acceptance of the movie. So I think Disney has a big problem in knowing when something's going to fail and when something's going to be a hit, and they don't trust their own judgment anymore. And that's what this marketing campaign
See,
tells me.
and that's what I think too. But mostly just because you would hope that a company that really wants to send, if they really wanted to send the message that we're changing, we're recognizing, we want to empower any minority group that feels like their voice isn't heard or that they have to hide who they are, which, these are very strong themes in the film. I think it's a shame to see that that was hidden. That they said, well, we're afraid that people aren't going to want to go see a movie about empowerment and about, letting whoever you are shine, whatever that is. I think that saddens me a little bit, but maybe, again, I think if you say, look, we did the research and we understand that America isn't going to want that message, or, the world isn't going to want that message, then they did the right thing business-wise. But yeah, did they do the right thing? In terms of being authentic to their brand and saying, you know what, this is what we believe and we're going to stick with it no matter what, I would say they probably didn't.
Yeah, I mean, Disney is a mess. That's a whole nother episode for Disney's brand, but I just get the feeling that they bought Pixar because they have no idea how to make movies that people love. So they just buy companies that make movies that people love. Anyways, we'll talk about them another day. I guess the last thing I wanted to get to from follow-up is this article about the Lego movie and how incredibly brilliant and authentic its marketing and just the idea of the movie was. Did you get to see this article?
I did, yeah, and this stands in contrast to what we talk about with Frozen, right? Here's a company that says, Oh, this is, we're going to sell you or try and sell you exactly what our brand is about. And it's using your creativity, and it's, of course, buying our toys. Now, let's not forget that the whole movie was, yes, a big ad, and that they're now very much selling these, the kits so that you can play with, the sea cow and what's his name, Iron Beard, Metal Beard, and all these characters. But I think that it felt, fairly true to who Lego is.
Well, the movie starts kind of folding in on itself as where it is a film or an advertisement or this giant marketing scheme. You can't really definitively say it's one of those things, but you can say that it's all of those things. It's actually a really good movie, thought pretty well done, but it's also a great brand advertisement in that it communicates the values of Lego. And then lastly, it's also a brilliant marketing move with cross-licensing. And then showing all those things coming together in this statement about what Lego represents to the consumer, imagination, creativity, and then popular culture, all melded into one.
And licensing, that's for sure. I mean, Lego is a company that licenses the crap out of anything they can. How many Lego Star Wars, Lego Harry Potter, Lego Indiana Jones games and sets are there going to be? Well, as long as there are still, as long as there's still IP to build characters off.
But they do it in a way that stays honest and authentic to the Lego brand.
Yeah, and I think, it stands in contrast to something like the internship. Here you have Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson trying to make this funny buddy, this funny buddy flick. But it was very, very much, an advertisement for Google. Every little, did you see that movie, The Internship?
Yeah, I did. And that's another good example of a opportunity for a company to be honest. If the internship said brought to you by Google at the bottom of it, I still think people would have saw it, and I still think people would enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, I really liked it, but it was a little dishonest in that it was more than just a movie, it was also a calculated advertisement.
Sure. So for those who haven't seen, it's Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn trying to recapture the old school type of spirit. And so there are these older men who lose their jobs, and they get this internship out at Google. And each challenge round of their internship, which again is a silly premise for no internship I've ever done has been like that. Anyway, is essentially a pitch for a product that Google sells. Here you're going to be using, Google Maps for this. Here you're going to be using Google Hangouts for this. And it was pretty unabashedly just, hey, we're trying to give as much airtime as we can to these Google products. But the Lego movie, yeah, you come away feeling like, I want to go play with Legos again. I want to be a kid. I want to create things. But it never felt like you were watching this movie and then they'd say, and here's our new Lego with, 10 brick sets or something like that, where it was pitching a specific product.
I don't disagree. We should probably move on to our show topic, though. I think that's it for follow-up. So let's talk about Facebook. Facebook is your favorite social network. Now, it might not be your favorite, but it's a social network. It's probably the most predominant and well-known social network. Kind of grown out of want to see other people's information online without it being a dating site or without it being a, a site for businesses or anything. It was just for everyday people to be able to go and post pictures, status updates of themselves, and see what other people say about them online. I think there's a couple things we should talk about before we get into the advertisements, and that's the strengths of the company. I think that a strength for Facebook right now is that it is the most that any regular people feel connected to technology is through Facebook. It's how I think most of people in the older generation know and interact with new forms of technology. Oh, well, I have a computer or a smartphone because I need Facebook. I also think that Facebook is somewhat of a diluted brand in that people dislike Facebook for reasons that are beyond Facebook's direct control. They dislike Facebook because of how other people use it or how they see it as a corrupting influence. And that's one of the biggest, I think, threats to Facebook business is how much people dislike Facebook, even though it's not a reflection of what they think of the company.
Yeah, I'll add a couple of weaknesses there. I think that users have, over the years, developed a negative opinion of Facebook in its relation to their data, their privacy. Facebook's approach is essentially, look, anything that you put on here, we can use for whatever we want, and we're not going to promise that you ever get it back. And that's just the agreement you're entering into. And that's not unlike an agreement with a Google or a Bing or really anybody on the internet today. But that is an attitude that the users have, is I don't know that I really want to be putting all my information or giving it to this company. I don't know who they're going to sell it to or where it's going to go. But, you know, again, this is 2014. You could probably say that about a whole lot of internet companies. And then kind of what you talked about that we'll get into is just one source of revenue, just advertisements. So that's a weakness that Facebook is trying to.
I think it's important to remember the reason that Facebook has been so dominant is because it was first and it defined the category. Not unlike how the iPhone, when it came out, defined the smartphone category. And then there's lots of other competing smartphone makers made things like the iPhone. That's what's going on with Facebook today, is Facebook was the first there, their predominant player. But now there are a bunch of other social networks out there, Twitter, LinkedIn, and the like. But when Facebook finally decided to get into the brand advertising arena, it was about 2 years ago. They wanted to give basically a manifesto, almost like an announcement to the world. And so they came up with this campaign that compared Facebook to chairs. And this is where I think it's very puzzling to understand what Facebook was trying to do. This is one of the oddest advertisements I've seen of a high value, high perception company like Facebook, where they really chose the most weird thing to compare themselves to, because they got to decide, they got to sit down and say, what do we want to say to people, what do we want to advertise to people? And what they ended on was that they were going to say Facebook is like a chair. I don't understand. If you have that moment to say something, that you say that, I mean, what are your thoughts?
I think my thoughts are that focusing on a chair isn't really focusing on what your product is all about. Your product is about people, and you need to be talking about people and their lives and their stories and all of the things that they're sharing and the ways that they're interacting with Facebook, and not necessarily whatever it is that the chair represents.
The only thing that I can kind of imagine they thought this was a good idea by was by saying maybe they thought people were stupid and people don't understand Facebook or aren't going to understand Facebook, so we got to give them a really simple metaphor. But why they chose chairs is what doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I guess you could have chose chairs out of sense of nostalgia, maybe?
Nostalgia about chairs?
My guess would be if I looked at the strategy statement. If you looked at the strategy statement for this campaign, it would read something like, we need to pick something simple that people can associate with Facebook and also something that people have an affinity for. But I don't know who then raises their hand as like, chairs. Chairs are what people love.
I was going to say, I don't think I've ever had any nostalgia about chairs. Now, maybe if we brought Ron Swanson in here and talked to him about, you know, his favorite chair that he, you know, built out with his own two hands, then maybe that's different. But I don't have nostalgia or pining for chairs.
It's just weird. If you think about what the ad is even trying to say to you, like the actual copy of the ad is bewildering.
Should we read the, for those people who don't know, I'm going to go ahead and read the copy from that ad.
Yeah, let's do it.
This is, chairs are made so that people can sit down and take a break. Anyone can sit on a chair. And if the chair is large enough, they can sit down together and tell jokes or make up stories or just listen. Chairs are for people. And that is why chairs are like Facebook. So when you hear the copy, or you know, when you read it, it makes a little bit more sense. But I feel like that's probably asking a lot of whoever was interacting with this spot to really sit and think that much about and kind of twist how a chair is like Facebook. Because I think you're right. Even reading the copy, it's like, okay, I guess I can see that.
The copy actually isn't a bad advertisement if the advertisement was for chairs, Because it was told me a lot about what makes a chair good, right? I think if you put that copy into a chair advertisement, it makes some sense. What's weird to me is that Facebook decided to say all those things and then wants you to associate them with Facebook, because those aren't even the best things about Facebook. I guess, like, let's go through them one by one. So I can sit in it by myself, which is kind of weird because I can't really do Facebook just by myself. It kind of is important that other people are a part of that equation. Secondly, I can sit it with another person. I guess this makes sense that, oh, you're connecting with other people on Facebook, so it's like a chair. But really, I don't sit in a chair with many other people. My wife and me might share a chair sometimes, but that's not something I typically do in a chair. And lastly, there's this, and Facebook is for jokes, but I don't understand how a chair is for jokes, because I can tell jokes without a chair. I don't know. This just feels a lot like a really good execution on a very bad idea.
Well, I'll tell you what it did. It painted a very romantic view of, not romantic as in, romance between two people, but a romanticized view of what I hope my living room in my home is like someday. People are sitting around and telling jokes and making up stories, listening to each other.
But that would be a case where Facebook is like your family room. And that would be a better metaphor, actually pretty good metaphor if you think about it, for Facebook. Because Facebook is more like a family room. I just think they picked chair, and I don't understand why they picked chair. It feels like very odd. It feels like a challenge you'd get inside of a, some board game compared to things, chair and Facebook. Someone at some point needed to look at this and say, guys, we're reaching here. We need to go back to square one. And if that's the ad agency or Facebook, it doesn't really matter. Someone needed to say that.
Well, let's move on to kind of the next step in Facebook's advertising, where we see the Facebook Home. This is an operating system skin that would go with Android phones to essentially change the entire look, the entire sense that you have with your phone, the entire interaction, so that everything is Facebook related. Rather than just having a Facebook app, the entire phone's operating system would be Facebook. And so we have some spots that really try and deliver what this is all about. Go for it, Brian.
So the first spot is about Facebook headquarters, or that's what's pictured, and it shows Facebook headquarters on the day of this launch of Facebook Home. Kind of a meta advertisement, but what it does is it shows all the normal things of an office, but it has like go-karts come in at one point when someone's checking their phone, and then the room fills with water because someone's jumping off a cliff into water. And what you get is that they're trying to show that while you're at work, while you're at your job or whatever, that you can experience your friends' activities and goings on while you're doing other things. So kind of the opposite of the Facebook is a chair ad.
Right. And it was very creative. I enjoyed the spot a lot when I saw it. But it did feel a little in your face, just like, oh gosh, I don't really know if I want my friends interrupting me that much all day, every day. But it was super creative. I liked it.
Yeah, and they've abandoned the idea of nostalgia and more focused on, you know what Facebook's for. You understand what Facebook's for. Here are some of the benefits of this specific feature of Facebook. Or here are some of the brand promises that we want to make to you, which is like you can experience other people's lives while you're at work or while you're doing something boring. There's another one where it's a guy in a plane doing the same thing, kind of seeing all the different goings on. And I think that's a better brand outreach statement, right? It's like, hey, like Facebook is something that'll let you be involved with others. It makes some sense. It actually is kind of fun ad, but yeah, it is, since it's focused on a specific product, maybe not considered an overall brand advertisement, but I would say since it's Facebook's second attempt at formal advertising, you can evaluate how much they've learned from the last kind of failure, which is now they say, well, this needs to be more fun. This is we need to take ourselves less seriously. We even going to show Mark in this ad, and it's going to be kind of fun that he's there. And we're going to give people a clear view of like Facebook is a way for you to interact with your friends. instead of making outrageous Facebook as a chair claims.
Yeah, these were spots that were definitely trying to sell Facebook home, trying to sell the operating system, because what better thing for Facebook than to have, be gathering data about everything that you're doing on your phone, not just everything that happens within the Facebook app on your phone. So I mean, this was definitely trying to sell the idea of transform your phone into a, quote unquote, Facebook phone. And for that, they were effective in that. Now Facebook Home has long since gone away and not really been something that's in the mainstream or in the public eye for Android phones anymore. But you're right. I think that these ads got a little bit closer to trying to communicate what Facebook's brand message, or as the Burberry woman would say, their story is.
That's a whole nother part of this that's hard to evaluate the ad, because you can really like what it says about the brand, but the feature it was actually touting ended up completely failing. And there's other reasons, of course, but it completely failing, well, does that mean that the ad is still a good advertisement because it portrayed Facebook correctly, or was it a failure?
Well, there were a lot of other reasons why that product failed, none the least of which being two phones were capable of having this Facebook operating system, or two or three phones or something like that. And the fact that, do users really understand how to, does the common Android phone consumer know how to change a skin and put a different, operating system on their phone? I mean, those are all, more business type questions than anything. But you're right, it did fail.
But this brings up an uncomfortable topic inside of advertising, is that if an ad is good, well, what does that mean? Does it mean that it resonated well? Does it mean that it communicated its message effectively? Does it mean that we liked it? I think the best way to look at an ad and evaluate it is say, well, was it effective? And I think in this case, if you look at it as a product ad, it wasn't effective, right? It did not sell that particular product very well. But if you look at it and say, well, the objective was to give Facebook a more approachable brand, then I think it was effective. So it depends on your metrics.
This new campaign that we're going to walk through, and hopefully this is something that we'll do. We'll post in the show notes links to the articles that we're talking about and the ads that we're discussing. But this new campaign, Grounded, for Facebook is really all about people, and it's a bunch of different spots, 7 or 8 spots, all about what people are doing and how they are connecting using Facebook. And, I watched these ads, Brian, and there was very, very little that actually focused on Facebook as a product. And some of that frustrated me just a tiny bit, because I was waiting to see, well, how is this ad not just, grandma and her son playing chess or checkers or something like that? Like, how does Facebook facilitate a grandma and her, grandson playing checkers? And so I almost wish that there were a little bit more feature. I hope that I kind of wish that these ads were a little bit more feature driven, but they're all about people. They're all about people getting together, having fun, connecting, and ostensibly connecting because Facebook allowed them to do so.
I understand your objections to the ad, but let me tell you why I really enjoyed these advertisements. Because, well, first of all, they use just enough of that veneer from all the technology advertising out there, where there's, pretty-ish people and there's really bright colors and that kind of thing. So I thought that visually the ads were nice. I also think that they were good because finally they're tying features to benefits as opposed to just focusing on features. They're saying, here's the benefit of what Facebook can do. And in some cases there's a little bit of a stretch of like, okay, that's not really about Facebook as it was about connecting with people. But what it does what it actually tells us is that Facebook thinks that that's valuable. And that's interesting as a consumer to say, oh, well, Facebook thinks that interacting with your family this way or interacting with your friends this way is important. Okay, I know more about them now. I think it does a really good job of giving kind of a thread of, here at the very end of the ad is this product, like groups or finding things on your Facebook feed, and kind of giving it that thread back to what the product is actually going to do for you. But in general, I think that these are just much more tone aware. They know who they're talking to. They know what people want to hear about Facebook, and they're executing on that pretty proficiently. These ads also give me a lot of hope, because if Facebook can really focus on what makes them good and what vision their company has for the product involved in people's lives, then it's a win. It's the first time in Facebook's formal advertising career where they give a clear path to what they want Facebook to be in someone's life. And I think that's a win for
And
brand advertising.
I think some of the wins for Facebook in these ads, and I mean, to counter my own point, are the fact that this paints a very different picture from the Facebook home ads, which are this is invasive, it's around you all the time. These people are your friends are interrupting you at work, they're interrupting you when you're in, on a plane. And it's there's so little of product feature that you're right, it really focuses on the person. When I was watching these ads, I started thinking, what are some other just of other technology companies and their ads about how people use products? And you think about even sometimes a little bit less on the Apple side because they're very much Shai Day likes to focus on the emotional and on people. But I can think of that Google spot where the college student is playing on his Nexus 7 tablet and his mom sends him a message in Hangout, says your dog is sick, you've got to come home, and it's all very heavy on, well, I'm playing a game on my tablet, and then I'm answering a message on my tablet, and then I'm getting maps directions on my tablet, and that may be a little too feature heavy. And so,
It's going to go back to the fact that when people can focus on benefits as opposed to features, that's always better. Because if you say, well, here are a bunch of features and like us, then that's not as effective as saying, here are all the benefits that you get when you use our product.
So yeah, I will very much, counter my own point in saying that the minimalistic amount of feature shots, feature descriptions on these Facebook ads is probably a better thing for the brand overall. Especially when you look at, I'll say this. If these ads were Facebook when it launched, I would say I don't like these because I don't think they tell me enough about what Facebook is. They tell me about who Facebook is, but they don't really tell me about what Facebook is. Whereas now, where most people on the internet, know what Facebook is and really what benefits it provides or what features it has, I totally think that these ads tell the right story about Facebook. Because you're right, I don't think that people really need to know, like, did you know Facebook has groups? Because they know that. Did you know Facebook has messaging? Because we know that. But they focus on not, hey, did you know Facebook has this? But these things can happen as a result of using Facebook.
Bear with me here because I think I have a little mini rant. It's important to understand that advertising takes place in the contextual world. It is not in a vacuum. So, are these ads that Facebook ran perfect? No, but I think they might be the perfect thing to be saying right now. I think that Facebook, if you were just selling the whole service with someone that didn't know what Facebook was, that would be one thing. But you're not doing that. You're trying to reach people who know what Facebook is, understand what it does, and now you need to communicate a new message, which is here is what Facebook stands for, here's what Facebook wants to communicate to you as the consumer. And that's what I think these ads do a lot better than Facebook has done before, which is here's who we are, here's what the company stands for, connections between people. Said another way, this ad is not for the people who don't use Facebook. This ad is for the people who use Facebook. It's to give more context to the company they already have in a relationship
Right, or
with.
the people who used to use Facebook and maybe have are gravitating away from it.
Yeah, and you'll notice at the end of these ads, they ends with their logo, which isn't the F that they usually do. It's the thumbs up logo, and it reminds me a lot of how Apple ends its ads or even somehow Google ends Chrome ads. It's this very simple symbol that is powerful enough to like evoke emotion without copy. That's very cool because a good brand would be able to show you that thumbs up and you'll say, "Oh, that's the like button. I like that's Facebook." And if you understand that, it's powerful. And Facebook's at the point now where I think that that symbol is that powerful. People can just see it and understand that it means Facebook. It means like. And I think they're smart to embrace that, and instead of having some pithy tagline, they stuck to what was already familiar to people. And this is where you're going to see Facebook is really coming into their own. They're figuring out a new way to communicate, which is good. Good for brands to figure that out.
Right. Yeah, I think that the pivot is, I mean, let's talk about just reasons why people like you and I have gone away from Facebook. I mean, for those who know us, it's no surprise that we don't really use Facebook as much as we used to and have gravitated to other social media platforms, probably for me, mostly Twitter. But I didn't really feel like I needed to see everything that I saw on Facebook. I didn't need to see it as often. I didn't need to see it from those people specifically, and really just felt like there was a lot of noise. And so these ads are successful in the fact that they're helping people, or at least trying to pivot and make them realize, well, Facebook isn't all about noise, and hopefully it's about connecting people and
That's interesting to think about because Facebook isn't really concerned about losing me as a customer as much as they're worried about losing their kind of place in my heart of brand loyalty. I don't think that I'm in a position to just leave Facebook. It's becoming a utility to me, I think to a lot of people. It's something you kind of just have to have. But it almost feels like I'm tolerating Facebook at this point instead of actually enjoying and finding delight in the service. And that's something that Facebook is going to have to focus more on, is that people will unwillingly use their service, and I think they, to their credit, they're actively trying to stay on top of the fact that they want people not just to use them, but also to love them, like they did in the beginning of Facebook. And if they are going to lose my brand loyalty, it won't be for a lack of trying.
So let's move on to some other big questions then. So we talk about a weakness of Facebook potentially being, well, what's their source of revenue? Well, it's advertising. So let's talk about two big acquisitions that, hopefully people have heard about recently, the acquisition of Oculus Rift and the acquisition of WhatsApp. Okay, well, first let's talk about what Oculus Rift is. This was a startup, a virtual reality company, and they were mainly focusing on games. John Carmack, famous for Doom and other video games, was really working with this team to build, the new virtual reality experience. I've personally used the Oculus Rift several times, and really, it's quite something. I mean, sitting there playing a racing game, and a car is coming up on my left, and I physically turn my body to check my blind spot because I felt like I was in that world. I am a person who I do enjoy video games as an experience. And so for the experience that the Oculus Rift can provide, I do feel like that's worthwhile. But one of the other times that I used the Oculus Rift was at Sundance Film Festival here in Park City, Utah. And I watched a Beck concert on the Oculus Rift. And that was really cool to feel like I was at the concert, to have some particular choices made in terms of the camera work that really made me feel like I was on stage and part of the experience. So, is it something that is only for video games? Well, definitely not. Do I feel like it has a place in a social networking site? Well, that's very much a different question.
And I was watching or listening to a podcast this week about Facebook's acquisition of Oculus, and they made a really good point saying that it really isn't going to affect the product today or within the foreseeable future. And I agree with that. I think that Facebook doesn't have a next year plan of what they're going to do with Oculus Rift. I think we saw Facebook purchase Instagram and really leave that product alone. And certainly, maybe in the future, they start integrating Instagram and Oculus. But I think that Facebook wants to be somewhat of a conglomerate here. They don't really want to purchase the actual technology as much as they want to be invested in the right technology, so when those technologies take off, that they can, be the ones inventing the future. I think in a lot of ways, Mark Zuckerberg looks up to people like Steve Jobs and to Bill Gates of how they led industries, but also looks at their flaws of their failures of seeing future industries or shortcomings of their company. And so I think he's being very proactive in purchasing companies he knows are the future without a clear way to integrate that into their product. What they have to be very careful of here is that people will resent Facebook buying anything because Facebook is the man. They're selling out to the man, and that's dangerous territory. Because if Facebook continues to purchase these large companies and these beloved products, people are going to be upset, And it's gonna give the brand image of Facebook some negative connotation. Something to, I
Well,
guess.
and that would be my commentary would just be, or the question that I would ask you, how is the purchase of or the acquisition of Oculus Rift related to the story that Facebook wants to tell, related to the ads that we just talked about, related to Facebook as a brand and, you know, for their message?
It's not so much that it has nothing to do with the brand story. I just don't think that Facebook's ready to tell us what their brand story is for it yet, because really this kind of acquisition isn't a, oh, everyone gets exactly what they're going to do with this kind of technology. A lot of times, technology companies will buy other technology companies, and it's easy to know what they're going to do with that. Like Google buying Nest. It's pretty easy to assume that Google will continue using Nest to, control temperatures in people's homes. But the question comes of like, well, what else are they going to do with it? And I think that might be the real question, is what else are they going to do with Oculus Rift besides gaming? And that'll be the thing we have to look for. The company to tell us, really.
Well, I read Joshua Topolsky of The Verge. He waxed quite philosophical about Planet Facebook and what that experience would be like, you know, going off world, or very much kind of a Second Life sort of a commentary. People who are so involved in, you know, the video game, the online experience, Second Life, that they're really going somewhere else. And those were his thoughts on it. So yeah, I did get to read it. I thought it was pretty funny. I don't know that I necessarily agree with his thoughts. Not funny that it's not valid, but funny in that it was very sci-fi.
But I mean, in that article, and I read that article as well, it talks about how the possibilities of what Facebook could do with Oculus Rift. And as much as I kind of hate that Facebook is buying these beloved companies, it is a pretty amazing to think of what Oculus could do for social interaction. Now, Facebook's detractors will say that it's going to just ruin real social interaction, but there's lots of things we can't do in real life. Josh Topolsky points out, like going off world or doing anything kind of superhuman. But I would say, in both cases, in WhatsApp and with Oculus Rift, that Facebook probably doesn't have a lot of use cases in their mind, as much as they know that they want to be in those businesses at some point. At some point, they're going to need those businesses to compete. I don't know if they know what for, though.
You know, I'm gonna push back on both those actually. I can see use cases for both of these products. I mean, the think about, and of course we're just throwing stuff out there, but think about uploading all of your pictures and your videos to Facebook, and then through some software innovation, they turn it into an Oculus Rift experience that all your friends can now interact with. Hey, I went and hiked and you know hiked the Grand Canyon this weekend with all of my friends. If you put on the Oculus Rift, you can experience what I experienced, or you know video conferencing, video communication, you know, much like a Skype, but using, you know, virtual reality in the Oculus Rift, and somehow making that experience something that really adds to this personal connection, connecting people. So, I mean, I can make some use cases. Obviously, they're not things that the Oculus Rift can do now, but I can create some situations there. And WhatsApp, I mean, if Facebook really is this company that is intending to tout themselves as a company that is connecting people, well, yeah, then what better company to snap up than the company that is than this little app that helps people who can't afford SMS messaging in other countries and in other areas around the world connect to each other and eventually kind of merge that into Facebook Messenger.
But the problem there is that people chose something besides Facebook Messenger. And so they're upset because they already made their choice, and now they're being, acquired by Facebook. They don't get to make that choice anymore. I think that's why actually you won't see Facebook integrate WhatsApp into their product or anything like that immediately, because people will be upset that they were forced to choose, Facebook Messenger. I mean, when you go to the App Store, there are two apps. There's WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, and people chose WhatsApp, not Facebook Messenger. So you risk alienating your consumers by forcing the brand upon them. Facebook's brand equity is not as beloved as something like WhatsApp's brand equity. Like people.
Well, whoa. That's a big statement.
You don't think so?
Do I think that Oculus Rift is more valuable than Facebook? No, I don't think that.
Well, I'm not saying that they're more valuable than Facebook. I'm saying that people are more loyal to the brand, and the people who love Oculus Rift or love WhatsApp love it a lot, and the people who use Facebook don't necessarily love it a lot. Does that make sense? It's not about maybe equity,
Well,
it's about.
I think that those are potentially some vocal user bases in light of the acquisition. I guess we're talking about different things here. Value as a brand versus, just.
Not necessarily how much the brand is worth. I shouldn't like not net value of a brand. Obviously, Facebook is a higher value brand. But as far as like what users think, they've bought two beloved things. And Facebook, to especially to the people inside of Oculus or that love Oculus and people that love WhatsApp, don't seem to love Facebook. That's a big brand challenge. That's a giant brand challenge. And the one thing that I think is kind of the opposite of all of the concern is that look at what they've done with Instagram. They've done a lot of great integration, but man, have they left that product be what people loved about it, and they let it stay that way. So I'm hopeful that on both of these, that they let it stay the great product that it was when they bought it, and they improve it and maybe, incorporate
Yeah,
it eventually.
as far as were they intelligent decisions, I think that I can see both of those as companies that can integrate well into who Facebook is and what they're trying to do. So I think that I don't have any problem with either of them. Now, as far as how much the value was, well, that's a different matter. $19 billion or whatever it finally comes out to, $14 billion is a whole lot of money for WhatsApp. But yeah, why not buy up the competition? I see your point in saying people chose it specifically over Facebook, but whatever. That's what you smart business does, buy out the competition.
Like, this was a great business move, and now their branding problems with WhatsApp are going to be the focus. How are they going to incorporate this company into the brand story that is Facebook? And I agree with you. I think that they're capable of it, but the fact that I don't know is a problem for them.
Yeah, it does feel a little bit like an uphill battle, that's for sure.
Okay, man. I think we've exhausted the topic. I think we're good.
We did. I think we covered a lot of good stuff. I think that Facebook is a company that, actually seems like they're in a pretty good place right now.
I'm very excited to see where they go. I think that what we see out of them in the next 2, 3 years is going to impress us, and I think they're going to get better and better at messaging why they're valuable. So, anything else before we end?
No, I don't have anything else.